Hello, I'm Georgina Robinson.
And I'm Tom Deason.
Welcome to the Rugby World Cup Daily. Coming to you from Japan every day throughout the 2019 Rugby World Cup.
Hello and welcome to Rugby World Cup Daily, episode 20, I think.
Yeah, probably close to 20. Almost 3 weeks now together. Yeah.
I'm Georgina Robinson. You just heard from Tom Deason. I've let him back on the podcast. I'm sure you're all relieved to hear him back.
I did listen to that. I don't know how to feel about that, whether I was brushed, but I'm very happy to get the call back. So thanks, G. Means a lot.
Always. I've actually had a really lovely day off on Monday, so you're going to need to do most of the talking here and tell me what went down. Who did we see at Wallabies? What are they going to do this week? Are we going to see a strong side in preparation for England, get guys battle-hardened, or are we going to see them rest people? That's what I really want to know. What do you think the team will look like for Georgia, Tommy?
Well, just on pure selections, previously they've obviously chopped and changed the halves. We know Christian Leifano and Nick White's got the gig in Fiji game in Sapporo, and then in their most recent win against Uruguay, Bernafolin will get in with the starters in Tokyo against Wales. So if you want to go horses for courses there and talk about the fact that taking selfies of us live to the podcast.
I'm also going to do Twitter live for this. No, I was just for posterity,
okay,
you know, like
okay.
day 20 on a daily podcast. It's quite the commitment.
Well, you TV types are always very good with all that stuff, so I wasn't ready for it. Look. But then obviously then your question is, well, do you go back to Wilgenia and Bernafolo? We know Bernard had a bit of a stinker against Wales. Let's be frank. And
no, I think the Bernard Foley experiment is over. If they gave him another chance at 10, it would be one of two things. Either desperation on Michael Checker's behalf, wanting Bernard to be a player he isn't at the moment and hasn't been for a little while, or it will be a strategy to rest your best team. And I know that Georgia are going to be hugely physical, but I want to see the best team. I want to see this team give us a taste of what they might be able to produce in the knockouts. And I do kind of get the feeling they're holding something back.
Yeah, maybe, but I mean, there is a school of thought that, you know, by picking your best team against Georgia, that is the best thing and best preparation rather than coming in cold for a quarterfinal likely against England.
Exactly.
You know, we've seen England pick a near full strength side for Argentina and put them to the cleaners ahead of their match against France. So they're slowly building into the tournament. We saw the All Blacks pick almost a full strength side as well to play Tonga, which they smashed 92-7, I believe, in their last warm up game before a massive game against South Africa straight up at the World Cup, which they won. So you could argue that there are teams out there doing so, whereas the Wallabies have been more accustomed and would rather chop and change their side. Look, I would expect them to be almost full strength. The guys who didn't play on the weekend, James O'Connor said his cork was okay. He would have to get through training on Monday, which is today, just to double check whether that is okay, but you wouldn't imagine they would risk it. But he sounded...
What's a cork? Is that like a subdural hematoma, like a deep bruise?
Yeah, like...
It's in his thigh. That's a deep bruise, isn't it?
Yeah, well, I asked him where he got it from, and it was a David Pocock roundhouse kick. Words
wow.
to that effect in the Wales game. So he's been nursing it for a while.
Okay, I mean, yeah, to leave him out of a game, I think it means it must be a decent cork.
So, yeah, you'd imagine so, but it's very rare. You would imagine, and from my understanding of corks in more league, that they go longer than sort of a week or two.
Okay.
Anyway, we will see, unless there's severe muscle damage. Then you've got the Jordi Pitea situation. Had a fantastic debut against Uruguay, as we know. Got involved, a number of touches, set up a try, scored a try himself with his second touch. Do you pick him? James O'Connor, guy in very, very similar shoes 11 years ago when he made his test debut as an 18-year-old, spoke about some of the things that he taught to Jordan about. And interestingly as well, talked to his parents as well a little bit after the game.
Talked to Jordan's parents.
Yeah, just about the... was my question just about interested, you know, on his messages to a young kid with the world at his feet whose life's going to be very different when he goes back to Super Rugby now. He is, as we touched on, I believe, in the podcast after the game, he's hot property now, and his life will change, and there will be so much interest for him and the glitz and the glamour that comes with being a footy player of that calibre at that age. So James was just... didn't go into a lot of detail, but it noted that he had spoken to his parents about the off-field, suppose, not troubles, but extra responsibility and limelight that come with being a wallaby at that age and touted as the next big thing.
It's funny, I've heard a story that James O'Connor, I haven't confirmed this, but I've heard a story that James O'Connor's dad, you know, basically had a book in the works when James was still a teenager.
Wow.
So, you know, James has certainly learned a thing or two. And he told me that he just, you know, his love for the game just was totally snuffed out. I mean, he played relentless footy, you know, for a number of years, but quickly that, you know, and James is a guy like Jordan, a guy like Kurt Lee, and a guy like Izzy who are so natural and are filled with such joy in the way they play. So when you lose that, you are really going through the motions. So I'm sure James's words were of a protective nature. It'd be really interesting to draw him on that further, wouldn't it?
Yeah, he said, look, they're going to link up at the Reds next year, so there'll be obviously ample time to see how that relationship flourishes now that Samu Karevi's not in the midfield, so they will probably link up at 12 and 13, you would expect, at the Reds next year, but a lot of time to do that. We do apologise for the noise. It's raining and we're huddled up in a stairwell, doing our best to try and get a bit of quiet space. So we know this podcast isn't necessarily the quietest of all time, but...
or has the highest production value, but we hope the content is satisfying you all. It's really great. We feel like you're almost like our editor. We sort of get to a day's end and debrief on what's happened and... you know, really crystallises things for us, don't you think?
Or just being made at the bar. This is what we would do at the bar. If we went to bars frequently.
Except we've just finished ice creams, not beers.
True, on our best behaviour. I've also written a piece for the paper on Tuesday just about there was no games on Monday here. There's 12 remaining pool games and there's a lot of different permutations there, obviously. The bigger one is Fiji-Wales in terms of how that affects Australia's chances. That is on Wednesday, which we will be keeping a close eye on. If Wales win that, then Australia are basically certain to finish second, provided they don't stuff up against Georgia, but also Pool C as well. We have a big England-France game on Saturday, which will be in Yokohama, and could have basically the winner of that will top the pool. And then, therefore, whoever finishes second is likely to play Australia. And the other big game, too, is the Yokohama fixture between Japan and Scotland in...
Jan and Scott.
Yeah. Japan, they're looking incredibly to go 4 from 4. And if they do that, they will top the pool. But there's also some talk of a typhoon. The World Rugby released a statement on Monday night here saying they're looking into it. I suppose with a lot of typhoons, there's been a few false alarms this World Cup.
Well, yeah, there was one big false alarm, and it really within, you know, basically the day after they sent out the warning, it sort of became clear it had changed course and was set for China. So it'd be interesting to see this one, because this one has major ramifications, does it not?
Oh, for sure. They're forecasting that it would strike sort of Friday, maybe Saturday more likely. Obviously, Australia played Georgia on Friday and Shizuoka. So if... the couple of games there, Ireland game and in particular as well the Scotland-Japan game, don't get on. That would just be a nil-all draw, and that could have major implications for the pools, potentially even a side like Ireland. Oh, no, Ireland wouldn't go because Scotland are behind them at the table at the moment, but it could throw us banner in the works.
I mean, it just alters the integrity of the competition. It just tilts it on its axis, really, and... is just not an ideal result. If it's null and void and the team doesn't get any points, they don't get an opportunity to put their best foot forward, and it's just not what you want in a Rugby World Cup. So,
and World Rugby knew that typhoons were a risk at the World Cup. They had plans in place. So if a team was to be robbed of a, you know, knockout berth because of a typhoon, you could understandably, you know, sympathise with them that they would cry foul, and fair enough.
Yeah.
The other talking point still is our mate, our Aussie streaker mate, who we must say...
Only in the holding cell.
Yeah, it's our understanding that he's still there in an Oita police station. He's been in contact with family, bits and pieces, but he would be pretty rattled, you would imagine, as we've discussed previously, you know, the...
He's gone 48 hours now, hasn't he? So they've obviously... that's interesting in itself because... If you can hold him for 48 hours without just off the cuff, right, for no good reason, hold someone for 48 hours, and then you have to seek the authority of a prosecutor.
There's also an extra 24 hours on top of the 48, which you can do as well.
Okay, so maybe they're doing that. But if they go longer than that, that actually means there's a reasonably serious charge they're looking at whacking him with. So I hope he's got some pants on by now.
Oh, it was a pretty great kimono, but you would imagine they've got a spare few undies for him if he needs to.
Or a yukata.
Yes.
You could teach him how to do that particular wrap and belt.
Yeah.
Without it gaping open too much.
I did don one of them on the way to the onsen the other night, but look.
And at breakfast the other morning. Everyone has to know you did wear one down to breakfast. As is the style in a traditional hotel, but I came down, showered, dressed, made up. Anyway.
I just thought that's what you had to do. I was being respectful, Georgina.
You're just a natural man.
Yes. Look, we will keep on top of that story. It is a bit of a funny one. I suppose in Australia, a streak would be laughed off, but I think clearly Oliver's realised that he's definitely realised that you can't get away with that here, and I'd be staggered if anyone else tried that.
It's just a good lesson, isn't it? In, you know, when you go to these major international events, make sure you just do a little bit of research, and if you're going to get loose and legless, do it in a safe space, not in a stadium full of 37,000 people.
Some other news confirmed today that Andrew Hoare, the Waratahs boss, has officially handed in his resignation letter as of this morning on Monday. The board was trying to search for answers. A number of people within the organisation had not heard a lot from Andrew.
Look, we'd heard this rumour for a little while.
We'd reported on Friday that he was...
Oh, and for a little while before that, and some people on the board had no idea and were gobsmacked by even the speculation. Others knew that he was going through that process with the Blues. But this basically, from what I can gather, forced Andrew Hoare's hand. You know, maybe he hadn't decided whether he would when he applied for the Blues job, but when we reported this last week, it sort of brought it all to a head. And perhaps the administrator was a little naive in that regard, thinking that you can keep that sort of stuff. I mean, rugby's a small community in the end. He kept it reasonably quiet for a while, but I think you talked to the chairman today and they released a very vanilla statement, everyone thanking everyone else for their service and commitment. But you talked to the chairman and got a sense of how they were feeling, Tommy, did you?
Oh, absolutely. Roger Davis, the chairman, was on his way. It's a public holiday, so everyone's just... we do forget that being over here. It's a public holiday and there was a bit of scrambling today and over the weekend, probably when they would have least liked to have having to be dealing with something like this. But I spoke to Roger this afternoon as he was out in the country, I believe. We cut out a few times, but, you know, he said that he had formally communicated with Andrew on Sunday, and then he basically said, mate, are you in or out? I need you to confirm or deny. This is a story that I've written for tomorrow, and he said that, yeah, he resigned on Monday morning. There was rumours circulating, but where there was smoke, there was fire, and until he actually handed in his resignation letter, and he said that the quote is, you know, the season starts soon, so the timing is shit in that regard. We'll survive.
That's Roger Davis's words.
Said he was surprised and felt a bit let down by it all, and said he couldn't believe that he would go for the Auckland Blues. He basically had a crack at him, and just on your way out, mate, like, what are you doing, champ? We've got
Wait, Roger Davis champed Andrew Horn.
No, look, I... Look,
you're paraphrasing.
I'm paraphrasing the chant, most definitely. I wish
it
did.
But it had that tone.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. You know, the quote here, I don't understand the move. He's achieved a considerable amount in 3.5 years he's been with us. He's about to get a brand new stadium, a brand new high-performance centre, a new coach, and arguably he's got the largest player franchise base in Super Rugby. But I just struggle to understand what he would see in going to the Blues that we don't have here.
Ouch.
Yeah, zinger. Yeah.
That's a zinger.
Don't let the door hit on the way out.
It's not great timing for the organisation either. I mean, you know, it's one of the legacy brands in Australian rugby, but it's really bad timing. They're in the middle of an Israel Halal court case. They're in the middle of...
coach is less than a week old.
The coach is less than a week old. They still have to recruit an assistant and a strength coach. That's probably well advanced, but... I mean, off the field, and the stuff that actually concerns a chief executive, they're still homeless. They're homeless for another 2 seasons. They still have to negotiate that deal. It's a lot of information for a new chief executive to get up to speed with. They're going to a new format, so they're basically arriving at the latter stages of a Super Rugby negotiation. Not that the Super Rugby teams are involved, but this negotiation that Australia runs directly affects their business model. They're about to lose a home game.
Do you mean by way of a broadcast deal?
So the new person has to get up to speed with a lot of stuff, to get to grips with a changing business.
Crowds.
Has to reverse a decline in crowds.
Without a stadium. Yeah, look.
With a season, I mean, they're essentially a nomadic team. They are building a centre of excellence, you know, out of Daceyville near Bonnie Doon. It's really bad timing. And I haven't spoken to Andrew about his reasons for going, but...
And I tried to call him today and was brushed. So he may be busy, which is
fair. We get brushed a lot in the journalism business.
And not also the journalism business. Leave it at that.
That's for Rugby World Cup After Dark podcast.
Yes, all will be revealed after we finish this tour. But, yeah, team naming tomorrow on Tuesday. We'll bring you all the news from that ahead of a Georgia game. And we're, 3 or 4 days out from the Wallabies' last pool game. It's, I don't know about you, but this...
Do you know what this is? This always happens. This is the mid-tournament lull. It's the final week of the pool stages. It's also tough because Georgia, you know, is not... It's not like they saved Wales, Australia for the end. We're pretty much guaranteed a spot in the quarters. And, you know, you've been on the road for 3 or 4 weeks, maybe 5 even in your case, and it just starts to bite a little, you know, like the distance from home, the travel, the sort of round-the-clock workload. So this is the lull. It's your first World Cup. And, I mean, you're showing no signs of it outwardly, but things will pick up again, you know, towards the end of the week, and it kind of all hell breaks loose in quarterfinal week.
I will get good for a England quarterfinal.
And we will get good for some proper grammar and pronunciation. Anyway, you guys get good. We love chatting to you every night. This podcast getting later and later. Sorry, everyone. Sorry, producer Dave and Cormac. But we'll get good in the...
Get good for it.
We'll get good for it.
You never heard that cricket term? Get good for it?
No, mate.
Okay, all good.
I've heard more better, but not get good.
Get good for it.
Sorry, I thought that was just you really losing the plot.
No. Get good for it. My grammar's not great either way. Thanks for listening, folks. We'll be back tomorrow for all the latest from Tokyo.
Love yous all.
Sayonara.